both in Parshas Chayisora and in Parshas Toldos, the Torah gives a long description of the different Ovos, the way they met their wives, the way Yitzchak met his wife and the way Yaakov met his wife. And the Torah never gives a description of the way Avraham Avinu met his wife. The Torah describes about Moshe Rabbeinu Shidduch. The Torah describes about Amram, the Torah describes their marriage. The Torah never describes the marriage of Avraham Avinu. So the Kedushas Levi, which is a sefer by the Chassidish Rebbe, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditcheva, writes that Avraham Avinu was a goy when he met his wife. So he probably met her at a New Year's Eve party or something. It wasn't worthy of being recorded in the Chumash. It was a goyish marriage. As opposed to the others whose marriages from the very beginning were worthy of being recorded in the Chumash. They were terrific in marriages. And with respect to Amram, the Torah even incorporates the dating process into the Chumash. So the Ibn Ezra interprets that they lived at two different ends of the city, so that he took her out on a date, so he had to go from one end of the city to the other. The Ramban doesn't agree with Ibn Ezra. He doesn't think that that's the pshat. But Ibn Ezra learns that that's the pshat. That he went to take her out on a date from one end of the city to the other. So apparently there are different types of marriages. Some people go out on dates and some people get married in a very taradika fashion, and their marriages deserve to be incorporated in the Chumash to teach us that that's the way we should date and we should get married. And other marriages are not worthy of being, sometimes they straighten out the end, sometimes they don't. Avraham Avinu's marriage straightened out the end. But it wasn't the way he met his wife, was not worthy of being described in Chumash. Just a few months ago, they had a singles function in the Jewish Center. I remember it was, I think it was the Thursday night before Parshas Kisovo, because I remember what I spoke about. So I spoke and then I went home. So the phone rang around 11:45 at night. A character calls me up. Hello, this is so and so. He understands that I spoke at the singles function. What did I say? He wasn't there. What did I say? So I tell him over what I said. And then I say, he said, why weren't you there, you single? But he learned in, he didn't learn in our yeshiva, he learned in other yeshivas. He learned in Tellers and in Cleveland, and other yeshivas. So he says, which Meshuggah would want to marry me? I'm divorced already 3 times, and the wives had a good reason why they divorced me. He says, his father was rich, and he died, and he left him a big Yerusha, and he was a playboy, and he ran around. And he says, the Torah says you have to marry out of Ahava. And he gives me a whole drasha. Ahava comes from the word Hav. To give to others, you have to give. If you love someone, you have to give. And each time that he married like the Yifas Toyar, the Chashaktaba. He married because he wanted to have his desires satisfied. And that's why all 3 marriages ended up in divorce. So he says he's in his 50s and divorced 3 times and he's a Meshuggah. Who would want to marry him? So that's why he doesn't bother to go to the singles functions. Nice that he sized himself up like that. But the Musa that he was telling me is irrelevant, that a person should keep in mind that he should get married because a person wants to love someone, wants to give love to other people. If he's only interested in the Chashaktabo, then it's going to be like the Yifashtaya. It'll end up in divorce. Rabbi Hirsch has a comment in his commentary on Chumash that people say over. It says that after Yitzchok got married, Vayivieha Yitzchok, this is in Parshas Chayisor, Vayivieha Yitzchok ohel asorim abika chesriv kratilo liisha, and then Vayieha veha. But it's not like in many people today, they fall in love like in the movies, like on television. You fall in love first, and then after you fall in love, then you have to go marry the girl. Then you marry the girl. It says, no, first you check to see whether the shidduch would be good. You gotta see if the girl is normal. You gotta see that the, if she has midas tovus and so on, and then if everything works out well, and then you get married, then vayeha veha. Then the love is supposed to develop more after the marriage, not supposed to reach its peak before the people get married. It's not normal the way they describe things in the movies. That a lot of times people don't want to get married because they don't hear the bells ringing. You're not going to hear any bells ringing. if you see that the girl is a nice girl, nice parents and religious people and balas midas and everything, so then you marry the girl. The Torah describes the way Avraham Avinu was makdid. He wanted Eliezer to go back to his hometown in Aram Naharaim to get a shidduch. And then in today's set also it says that Rivka and Yitzchak both insisted that Yaakov should not marry any of the girls in the Benos Chais. He shouldn't marry anybody from the neighborhood. He has to go back and marry from their family. So what's the yichus of marrying from their family? Yichus. They should have a big yichus. So that's the way Esav took it. Esav heard. Vayar Esav at the end of Parashas told us. Vayar Esav kiroz b'nes tnam b'ena Yitzchak aviv. He saw that the parents are not happy about marrying plain girls. You have to marry a girl with yichus. So he went and married a girl with yichus. He married his cousin. That's big yichus. Yishmael's daughter. What was the big yichus? Yishmael's daughter. Yishmael was Avram Avinu's son. Yeah, Yishmael was Avram. Bas Yishmael ben Avram, an ainikol from Avram Avinu. Yeah, but it was Yishmael's daughter. What's the big deal? That's not the yichus. The yichus over here is not because they were related to Avram and were related to Yitzhak. The whole reason why the Drasha Saran explained, there's a long essay about this. The whole reason why Avram Avinu insisted that he wanted Eliezer to go back is because he felt that the people in that family had midas tovus, and he felt that the midas tovus go over in the genes. They weren't maminim, they didn't believe in monotheism and they didn't observe Torah, so he thought that they'll be able to teach the girl, that they'll be able to educate. But if a person doesn't have midas tovus, that you can never straighten out. And that was exactly the test that Eliezer gave to the girl. He wanted to see if she's kind, if she's a balas chesed. So he asked her for a drink of water, and she was nice enough to invite him to sleep over, and so on. She gave water to all the camels to drink. That's the main thing when you're looking for marriage. You have to look for midas tovus. And you have to look for a person who's intelligent enough that you can explain. If the person doesn't believe in monotheism, if the girl you're going out with doesn't believe in monotheism, the person should be intelligent enough that you should be able to explain to them what it's all about, and they should understand that they should be Shomer Shabbos and so on. Just last Shabbos, one of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael was telling me that when he learned in Panovich, his Rebbe was telling him that Rebbe was reading him a shidduch with that girl. So he says that when he was going out in Europe, so they had suggested for him different possibilities of girls. So one girl was not a Shomer Shabbos, but if she would marry him, then she said she would be a Shomer Shabbos. And the other girl had eaten treifas. The other girl was not used to eating kosher. But if she would marry him, of course, and this person was later on one of the Rabbonim in Panovich Yeshiva, Roshmo Rozovsky. So they read him these two shidduchim. So I think he said that his Rebbe had it. He asked Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, what does he think about it? So he said, the girl is not Shomer Shabbos, he would go for her. If she believes in monotheism, you can explain to her what it's all about, and she'll become a Shomer Shabbos. Okay, Eichat Teis. Even though for so many years she was not a Shomer Shabbos, but she'll become observant later on, okay. But Rabbi Chanan recommended the girl who ate treifas that he wouldn't, even though from now on she'll keep kosher, that he wouldn't recommend. Because the Chazal says that a person who eats treifas is a timtum halef. It has an effect. I don't know, he says Rabbi Chanan assumed that doesn't apply to Chil Shabbos, only by treifas. So that's what Avraham Avinu also. He wasn't so concerned about the fact, wasn't interested in yichus. What's a big yichus that she was from Lavan's family? It's a shvachi yichus, not such a gvaldi yichus. He wasn't looking for yichus. He was looking for a girl with midas tovus. And he knew that even though these people were of the Avodah Zarah, he knew that they had midas tovus. That's the key to a happy marriage. A person has to be a bal chesed. Has to be, if a person is a bal gaiva, or obstinate and set in their ways and not interested in pleasing anybody else, there's going to always be machlekes in the family. So there'll never be any shalom bais. I am shalom bais. You have to have both parties have to be bal chesed. Have to be prepared to compromise. Not to compromise on the mitzvah sater, but to compromise on their style of living. If this person always has a style of living, every week she buys a new pair of shoes, and she's so used to it that she can't live without it. The other guy wants to sit on a yeshiva. How can he afford to buy a new pair of shoes for his wife every week? He'll go broke. So you have to have people who are not so set in their ways. They have to be flexible. They have to be able to accommodate the other party. There is an inyan. The Gemara speaks about the significance of an inyan of marrying a bas tamei chacham, and that's for two reasons. The Gemara in Pesachim gives the reason simply for an eitzah teiva, that the father can't always be there to raise the children, so the wife does most of the work in raising the children. So the Gemara says, if the father's not going to be there all the time, so at least if the wife is a bas tamei chacham, so she knows how to raise the children. The Gemara has an expression, in case the husband will die, in the case the husband will have to be out of town, or go to Medina Sayyam, or whatever, at least he knows that his children will be raised as religious Jews. So the Gemara recommends that as an eitzah teiva. It'll be good for raising the children. She knows what a religious home is all about. And then the Rambam quotes another Gemara. The Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvot quotes the other Gemara. Voisidbaki Dovik the Talmid Chacham. How is it possible to be Dovik with the Shechina? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Eish HaOchlohu. So the Gemara says, Dovik with Talmid Chacham. That means a person should always be interested in associating with Talmid Chacham, even to the extent of marrying a Bas Talmid Chacham. He should always have interest to have to do with Talmid Chacham. But it's not that he should marry a Bas Talmid Chacham because he should look for Yichas. There's no inyan of looking for yichus. She married Bas Talmid Chacham because it makes sense. Because he should always be interested in being friendly with Talmid Chacham. He should know that he married Bas Talmid Chacham. She'll know how to raise the children properly. Because it makes sense. Not Stam because the guy will be able to say later on that he has this big yichus. He married a girl. That's what Esav married the daughter of Ishmael, and that was the big yichus that he had. That's what we said in the slichas. In the big base medish, they say slichas on Bahab. I don't know how many people are fasting. I don't know if anybody's fasting, but they say the slichas on Bahab. So on the last slichas, they said in one of the final paragraphs, one of the prayers that we offer is Kalei Seir of the Chosna Ba'ola L'tzion Moshim. That the Rabbanu Shalom should knock off Seir and his father-in-law. Seir is Esav who Seir. And his father-in-law is Ishmael, the Arabs with the Christians. Esav always represents the Christians in the Gemara. Because Yaakov and Esav were twins, and the Christians claim that theirs is a twin religion to the Jewish religion. The Rambam writes about the Rambam writes in the, I think in the Igeres Hashmad, on the Igeres Teiman, I forgot already which one of the letters, but he wrote to the Igeres Hashmad. Igeres Teiman is about Mashiach, about the false Mashiach. Igeres Hashmad is about forcing the Jews to worship other religions. So he writes about that all the other religions who claim to be similar to the Jewish religion, twin religions and so on, like Christianity claims they have the same tradition, Judeo-Christian tradition, so similar. And the Rambam says, how is it similar? It's like a Moshel Amad Avadayim, you have a human being standing next to a statue. The statue is exactly a spitting image of the human being. But they're two different things. The human being can sneeze. Let's say they stand. Must have seen those movies where the guy hides in a wax museum, no? You always have like that. And he stands next to the statue, and they can't tell which is the person, which is the statue. So the Rambam says, of course you can tell the difference. This one has the blood circulating, and the body is warm, and this one is not, and this one is breathing, and the other one is not breathing. He says, how can you compare a true religion with a false religion? They're two different things. There's no such thing as a twin. Is it been Yaakov and Esav didn't look the same? The Pasuk says one was Anochis. Nochi Yishcholok and Esav was Yishseyah. They weren't identical twins. They were very different. They happened to be twins, but they had nothing to do with each other. So too, the Judaism and Christianity. They're twins, yeah. Christianity was born out of Judaism, but they have nothing to do with each other. They're totally different. So that's what the Chazal always used the expression Esav and Seir to represent Christianity. And Yishmael represents the Arabs. So that's the prayer that we said, Kalei Seir v'chosna, the Rabbanu Shalom should get rid of the Christians with the Arabs. We all know the Tzion Mashiach. Apparently the one who wrote that, the Rishon, who wrote that Trina, that Piyut, was basing his prayers on Midrashim, that right before Bias HaMashiach, those are going to be the Tzoras. We're going to have all the Tzoras from the Arabs and from the Christians. Different degrees of ahava, different kinds of ahava. The deep feelings of ahava develop further into the marriage. You have to have some level of ahava. The after rachat kamoicha. You have we all love each other also. So that you have to have before you get married. No, that you have to have. You shouldn't reject each other. You shouldn't. Gemara says that the Atarach Kamacha doesn't apply equally to all people. We say all Jews are created equally, but some are created more equally than others. Yeah. So the Gemara says the Atarach Kamacha applies more to your wife than it applies to the next door neighbor's wife. So it's not your own wife, it wasn't your next door neighbor's wife. You don't say all the Atarach Kamacha. The Gemara says the Ikir is by the wife. You have to pick a girl whom you think you'll be able to really love well.
Also, you mentioned recognizing about Vito Tovro, and you go, only the Jesus is Vito Tovro, the Vito Tovro is the Jesus. Isn't it supposed to care if you see that the same, the two of us produce the rift between the Marathon, and how do you see, you know, one who doesn't come up to you one way or another, you could end up with just the opposite, so.
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know, but that's apparently what the mashmois of the psukim is. That's what Avraham Avinu insists. He wants him to go back to his family, and that's the test that Eliezer gives to see if he thought that by his family there's a better chance of having bali midas than by the locals, than by all the bali tshuva. He didn't want any of the bali tshuva for his son Yitzchak. The Gemara says that he rushed too quickly. Yeah, that he shouldn't have. No, the test that he gave was a proper test. But then right away he gave her the ring and he gave her all her jewelry before he even found out what family she was from. So that wasn't right on his part. There could have been other big chesronis. Just because the girl is a balas ches, it could be that she has cancer. It could be that her father's not a shugunit. Her father's a crook. So you have to check other things out in advance. He shouldn't have rushed so quickly to give her the ring and so on. The Gemara is critical of Eliezer, but the test of Midas Tavis, that was a correct test. You have to check for a lot of things before you get engaged. The Gemara comments on the pasuk Me Hashem Yotzo Adavor that Shiduchim are made in heaven. The Rambam writes in the Shemayna Prokim in his Hakdamah to Pirkei Avos that we believe that there's Bechira Chofshis with respect to mitzvahs and Averis. The Gemara says Hakovid Eshamayim Chutz Miyira Shamayim. So the Rambam understands that Yira Shamayim means all mitzvahs and Averis, that everybody has Bechira Chofshis. So what does it mean Hakovid Eshamayim? Everything is Nigza and Eshamayim means it's Nigza. The Gemara has an expression whether the person will be tall or short, whether he'll be fat or skinny, whether he'll be smart or not so smart, whether he'll be rich or poor. That's Nigza and Eshamayim. Tzadik v'rosh eloi kamar. The Malach HaMemun al HaHeirayon is Geizer, whether the baby is going to be Gibor or Cholosh or Osher or Ani and so on. But Tzadik v'rosh eloi kamar. The Malach doesn't determine whether the baby is going to be Tzadik v'rosh. That's what the pasuk says in another. Yisalel chacham chachmas, yisalel gibor b'gvor, yisalel ashir b'yashur kimizos, yisalel amesel ha'stil v'yadoa osi. So that Gemara in Nida that says that Malach HaMemun al HaHeroim is going on these three things is paraphrasing the pasuk. Yisalel chacham chachmas, yisalel gibor b'gvor, yisalel ashir b'yashur. Those are the three things. The Masha says those are the three things that the Gemara singles out because the pasuk singles them out. There's nothing to brag about because that's Men HaShemayim. So what is it up to the person to decide? That's the chiruch avshis to do mitzvahs or averus. So the Rambam writes in the Shemayna Prokim that in Pielion l'seitzei haroes v'hatoiv, he quotes the pasuk in Eicha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't force people to do mitzvahs, he doesn't cause people to do averus. He gives everybody chiruch avshis. You have the ability to choose to do mitzvahs or to do averus. So the Rambam writes, Memele, he doesn't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will single out who you're going to marry. That's up to you to decide. If the person is going to marry a tzaddikus and she'll see to it that he goes in a straight and a narrow path, so then the Baruch Shalom is causing him to do mitzvahs, and the Baruch Shalom is going to cause him to marry a mashat, and she's going to mislead him to violate averis and to leave the whole Torah. So then the Baruch Shalom is causing him to do averis. So the Baruch Shalom doesn't cause people to do mitzvahs or averis. So the Rambam says, therefore, he thinks that Shiduchim are all decided by the people, because that's all part of the Chiruch Avshis. That's all part of the challenge of life. So in the regular editions of the Gemaras, the regular Don L'Shas and the Gemara, they have the Shemayna Prokim printed, the Hakdamah to Pirkei Avos, the commentary of the Rambam. It's called Shemani Prachim HaRambam. It has 8 chapters, obviously. For lack of a better name, so they called it Shemani Prachim. Like when Rav Soloveitchik years ago printed the drushes that he gave for the Mizrahi. So the first he called the first one Ad Drusha. And then he called the next one Fear Drushes. And then when they combined it into Hebrew, they called it Chamesh Drusha. And the one rabbi tells Mr. Chaim Avraham, who is negotiating with him, that they should print it. And he kept on doing all the work. Every week he would come to the dormitory and ask him, he has a better title, maybe this title, that title. Every week the rabbi said, no, I have a better title, Hadrasha. So that's what they call the Shemana Prok Nila Rambam. The 8 chapters, the introduction to Pirkei Avos. So when they have in the regular edition of the Vilna Shas, they have the Shemana Prok, on the bottom of the page, they have the Ha'oris of Rabbi Yankiv Hemden. Rabbi Yaakov Hemden says, how can the Rambam say that? It's against the Gemara. The Gemara quotes the Pasuk, Me'ashem Yatzah Davor, and the Gemara says, Dovah Zeh Kosev HaTorah, Rishad Ma'avim, Shulosh Baksun. It says all over in Tanakh that Isha Maskelis is Me'es Hashem. That the Rabbani Shalom decides who the person is going to marry. So it's Takat Pela. How does the Rambam write against the Gemara? So the Gemara in the first daf in Saito says that it's not always Zidugim are not always Min HaShemayim. The Gemara says it depends whether it's the Zidik Rishon or the Zidik Sheni. The Gemara says the Zidik Rishon is Min HaShemayim, the Zidik Sheni is not Min HaShemayim. So what's called Zidik Rishon, Zidik Sheni means that the guy's getting married for the second time around, guy's getting engaged the second time around. So the Meiri writes on that Gemara that Zidik Sheni means when people are getting married at the age of 20, 25, that's called Zivik Sheni. Zivik Rishon is when children are getting married at a young age. The girl is only 12 years old, the boy is only 13, 14 years old. They don't know what direction they're going to go, so that's Min HaShemayim. But all of us who get married, all of us, my cousin got married off her son at the age of 13, but all of us in America, they live in Meishar. But all of us who live here, regular, normal people, we get married, 21, 22, 30, between 20 and 30, something like that. So the Miri writes that that's Zivik Sheni. He understands that that's Zivik Sheni. When the personality is already formed at such a young age, between Bar Mitzvah and 20, the Gemara says that the Bezen Shalmaila doesn't punish, the Bezen Shalmata punish. The Bezen Shalmata doesn't punish until after the age of 20. After 20, then the personality is already formed. Personality is beginning to form at the age of 12 or 13. So the Bezer Shalmata is more machmer, and they consider that enough of a bardas to be held responsible for his actions. Bezer Shalmata, not till after 20. Yeah. So Bayas, we're always getting married after the age of 20. So Bayas, the Miri writes that everything is Zivik Sheni. So maybe that's what the Rambam meant. Usually the Miri gets all of his funny things from the Rambam. So that's what the Rambam meant. Today, that's it. Rambam himself got married late in life. He didn't get married at 21. I think he was in his 30s when he got married. So the Rambam probably means that Zidugim are not Min HaShemayim if you get married at a later age, but if you get married younger. So then the Gemara says that it is Min HaShemayim. What's the difference whether it's Min HaShemayim or not Min HaShemayim? Is there any difference L'maisa? So somebody said they have a collection of letters of the stifler, like after the Chazon Ish passed away. So they printed a collection of letters that the Chazon Ish wrote. So after the stifler passed away, they printed a collection of letters of the stifler. Not exactly the same. Chazon Ish has a very poetic style of Hebrew. Yeah, very original style Hebrew. The stifler has a very rough style Hebrew. So the style, people are not interested in style, just in the content. And the Chazon Ish are interested both in the content and in the style. And the kankan and the mashi yeshbo. And the stifler is just mashi yeshbo. No, the style is not so good. So the stifler has a letter that someone asked him, a shayla that he's going with a girl, and it's off and on. Should he take this as a simon? It's not going smoothly. Should he take it as a simon that this is not the zivik min HaShemayim? Because if it would have been min HaShemayim, it would have gone smoothly. Pashi pshat in the Gemara Seita, that's how Rashi reads the Gemara, that if it's min HaShemayim, it goes smoothly. And if it's not min HaShemayim, then it may or may not be rocky. So the stipler didn't want to discourage the guy. So he says, no, there's no nafkimina whatsoever, whether it's Min HaShemayim or not. Even if it's Min HaShemayim, maybe that it's Min HaShemayim, that it has to be Raki off and on. That doesn't indicate anything. How does he read the Gemara? I don't know. The Rashi on Sait, maybe Rashi on Sait is not by Rashi. Okay, maybe it's not by Rashi. But still, how does he read the Gemara? The simple Rashi reads simple pshat in the Gemara like that. When it's Min HaShemayim, it goes smoothly. The Gemara says, "Kosher v'zavgim ki kriyas yamsuf." That is difficult. So the Gemara says, "Yeah, that's in zivik sheni, but zivik rishon that's min hashemayim. So it's not kosher v'zavgim." And the disciple says, "Not necessarily so." say, I read the Gemara, I'm not sure. But that's what we should all keep in mind. A person shouldn't necessarily feel that that's simen min hashamayim. If it goes smoothly, then it's a simen, then it's good. Sometimes it goes smoothly and then it's terrible. It's a terrible shidduch. And sometimes it's rocky and it's a good shidduch. That's not necessarily the simen l'dava. That's what the stifle write. Not necessarily the simen l'dava. But on the other hand, there is an interesting comment that the Sefer Hasidim makes on the pasuk in Chai Yisora, when Eliezer is negotiating with the family of Rivka, and he says, "V'ato ad yeshchem osim chesed be'emeses adoni hagiduli. If you mask him to the shidduch, let me know. V'imlo, and if you don't agree hagiduli, tell me that you're not interested. Ve'efna al yomino al smo." So the Sefer Hasidim comments on the pasuk, and he says, if the girl's family says no, or the girl says no, so you don't chase after the girl. No is no, goodbye. Go somewhere else. That's a new shtick, a new American style, that you have to chase after the girl, you have to keep on chasing after the girl, and you have to, has to be rocky, and has to be off and on, and you have to win in the end. The Sefer Hasidim understands from the pasuk that it's not so. The girl's not interested. So goodbye and good luck. You go marry someone else. The Gemara in the first parak in Ksubas has a comment that everybody understands what marriage is all about. Still, one doesn't talk about these things. It's nivul peh, even though it's kachad darka shaloylam. Everybody understands what's involved in marriage, but still, it's considered nivul peh if a person speaks explicitly about these things. People have to be careful. We live in such a crazy society. Everything is porous. So the Torah tells us that when Rivka had met Yitzchak, she was about to meet Yitzchak, it says, "Vatikach hatzoif atiskos," she covered her face. Why did she cover her face? If she's going to marry this guy, especially according to the Medrash, Eliezer had already given the Kesef Kiddushin. Eliezer was a shliach, she already was married to him. This is already her husband. So what, she all of a sudden now she's covering herself more? Yeah. Yeah, but tikach hatzoif atiskos, and that's in Shulchan Aruch. We have a meaning that the kala puts a veil over her face. So some say that it's a reminiscent of this pasuk, tikach hatzoif atiskos. Even though the whole purpose of marriage is just the opposite of covering up her face, but still, it's not necessary and it's not proper and it's an iser, it's an avera to speak explicitly about private things. Rabbi Hirsch has an interesting essay. I don't think this is in his commentary on Chumash, I think this is in Choreh. He writes that the Maskilim and the Apikursim always made fun of the rabbis in the Talmud, that they derived Kiddushei Kesef, that's what we do today, we do Kiddushei Kesef, they derived it from buying real estate. That the farmer buys himself a wife like he buys a barn, like he buys a house. Avraham Avinu bought the Moritz HaMachpel, he buys a piece of real estate. And it says kicha, veikach eskalaita miyod, and then it says kicha chishisha. So we derive exerish of a kicha, just like you buy real estate and it belongs to you, you can do whatever you want with the real estate. So too, the farmer buys a wife. So the maskilim used to make fun of the rabbis, what a terrible attitude they had towards marriage. That's what one of the prominent professors published a very nasty essay in the newspapers today. That all the kedushin is not valid today. All the kedushin is not, because only kedushin the rabbanim. No one's married men at all. Why? Because if the women would realize how the halacha considers them like chattel, like you're buying real estate, that none of them would ever agree to get married. That's mamish. That's the time of the apikursim. This person who claims to be an Orthodox rabbi says like the apikursim. If the women would realize how the rabbis looked down upon them, said they would never agree to get married, so all the kiddushin is all kiddushin, so no one is married. They're only married midrabban. Why are they married midrabban? They shouldn't be married midrabban either. If they didn't agree to get married, they shouldn't be married midrabban. So what does it mean that the rabbis derived kicha kicha misayefim? So Rabbi Hirsch has a comment, and he points out that in Choshen Mishpat, there is a machlekes the sma and the taz regarding the nature of the din of king and kesef. When a person buys a field and he's kind of a kesef, so how come kesef is kind of? So the sma is of the opinion that it's kesef piro'on, that you pay for the value of the field. Field costs $1 million, and you pay the $1 million, and it's yours. Aye, but the halacha says that karka is nicknamed the pruta of the shavet pruta. So which karka is worth a pruta? So this masa is the karka is only nicknamed the pruta if that's all it's worth, or that's all you claim today, or the rest of it is zaka follow the milva. So you don't really owe any more money as the mei hapirun, as the mei ameka. But if you still owe money, then you're not kainah. And the Tas says that he's wrong. That that's not why kesef is kainah. The Tas says that kesef is kainah by karka, by stay ephron. When you buy real estate, you kainah be kesef, not because it's the mei hapirun. It doesn't have to be the mei hapirun. Kesef is kainah as a symbolic act. The haraya that it's only a symbolic act, that the rabbis derive kicha kicha mistay ephron. So what are you going to say when a husband gives the, when a chassan gives the kala a ring, the shavah puta, he's paying for the value of the kala. He's not paying, either the girl is priceless or she's worthless. But she's not worth a ring. The ring is worth $200. The girl is worth $200. The girl is worth a puta, a penny, a half a penny. It's not worth a half a penny. And you're not zaka fall of the middle of the rest of the money. He says, the Taz says, everybody understands. Only the apikursim don't understand. Only this person that thinks that he's an Orthodox rabbi. He was never a rabbi. His smicha was also a whole story. He's not so Orthodox. He never so Orthodox, and he was never a rabbi. The title of Eus, the whole thing is a thought. He was first a chaplain in the army, and then when he came back, at that time no one wanted to go to the army. After he came back, he served as a chaplain in the army, then yeshiva gave him smicha. He was never a rabbi. He was never Orthodox. Sheshis Meibresh was never Orthodox. So the Taz explains that you see from Kiddushin, that when you give Kesef Kiddushin, you're not paying for the Meha Mecca, it's a symbolic act. So he says by Kinya Kark also, Kark is nicknamed as the Kesef, is also just a symbolic act. It's what we call in Yeshivas, we call it Kesef Kinyan, as opposed to Kesef Piron. It's not that the money that you pay for the Kark is the Piron, the Meha Mecca. You have to pay the Piron, the Meha Mecca. You buy a Kark that's worth $1 million, you got to pay the $1 million. If you don't pay, so the whole Kinyan will not be valid. But the Kinyan Kesef doesn't rest on the fact that you have paid the value of the karka. It's just a symbolic act. The haraya from Kiddushin. Otherwise, how could the rabbis have ever learned that from Zdei Ephron to Kiddushin? So Rabbi Hirsch has an interesting comment. He says, why did the rabbis choose to learn Kicha? Kicha means Zdei Ephron. He probably could have figured out that Kicha means Kesef based on some other source in Tanakh. So he says, he thinks that perhaps the meaning is the following. The Gemara points out in Ksubis that there is a din learned out from Ksukim HaChumish that the husband has to support his wife. That let's say the husband comes from a family where they always spend a lot of money. Every Pesach Shavuot Sukkot they fly to Eretz Yisrael and they stay in a nice hotel. And then in the middle of the winter they go to Florida. And they go to Switzerland, whatever. They're always traveling around and relaxing, and they always have maids doing everything and raising the children. Everything is very fancy. And the girls from the simple family, they never did any of this stuff. They never travel so much. They never spend so much money. A plain day. So what style of living is the husband mechuyev to supply his wife with? So the Gemara says the klal is oyle if he can afford it. If he can't afford it, he can't afford it. There's nothing to discuss. We're talking if he is wealthy. If he can't afford it, so what standard of living is he mechuyev to treat his wife to? So the Gemara learns that from a pasuk, oyla ima ve'eni aretz imay, that if the husband has a higher standard of living, his family always went to Eretz Yisrael for yontov, they always went on vacations, they always had maids taking care of everything in the house, washing the dishes and cooking and everything, then the husband has to treat his wife like that. And if the reverse, if the girl's family had the higher standard of living and the husband's family was very plain, so the husband is mechuyev to maintain the highest standard of living that the wife had. That's called oyla ima, she goes up to his level. The eini aretz ima, she doesn't go down to his level. So the Gemara says that this klal, oyla ima ve'eini aretz ima, only applies kol zman that they're married together. After the wife dies, there's a din that the husband is mechuyev b'kvuras ishta. Avraham Avinu is metapel in burying his wife. So we learn out in the parsha number one that there's a mitzvah of kvura. Number two, that the habal chayiv b'kvuras ishta. The husband is the one who is mechuyev, not the children. The husband is more mechuyev than the children. If the husband is alive, he's mechuyev to take care of the kvura. So let's say the families had two different styles of kvura. One family has a style of levaya. They fly in maspidim from Europe and from South Africa and from California, knock out maspidim. And they fly in musicians to play. The Zman HaGemara used to play music at funerals, and they have fancy arenas and fancy ohel on top of the kever. Everything is fancy. They pour in a lot of money into it. They have the candles and flowers and everything. The other family has a plain hesped, whatever, plain hesped and plain floor. Everything is plain. So the Gemara says, but after the wife died already, so then you don't say Eilim of any Eretzim. So Rabbi Hirsch points out, despite the fact that the halacha only applies Eilim of any Eretzim, only applies while they're alive, and after the wife died, there's no more marriage, so then you don't say Eilim of any Eretzim. Nonetheless, the pasuk says that Avraham Avinu loved his wife so much, he went out of his way to spend Arba Meir Shekel Kesef Avel Asocheh. He spent a fortune of money. That's what the Mashmoyes in the pasuk is, that he spent an awful lot of money, unreasonably high amount of money, to be mechabed his wife, to bury her. The halacha requires you have to have a kever Yisrael, that you learn out also. You're not permitted to bury Jews and non-Jews together in the same cemetery. You have to have quite a harchoka between the two. But he didn't have to spend so much money to buy Dafka the Maras HaMachpelah. He could have bought some other location. He could have gotten cheaper Beis HaKvaros. He had his eyes Dafka on this location. Arba Meir Shekel Kesef. He spent a fortune of money to demonstrate how much he really loved his wife. So Rabbi Hirsch suggests the possibility maybe the rabbis chose to derive Kicha. Kicha is the Ephron, to imply to the Merames that a person should spend a lot of money on his wife, and if he has the money to spend, and he should honor and cherish and love his wife in the same way Avraham Avinu honored and cherished and loved his wife, to the extent that even after she died he was prepared to spend so much money, even though the halacha says he doesn't have to, that the oilim of any eretzim doesn't apply. That's the Gemara in Ksuvos. The Gemara says that a husband has to be oivis ishti kegufoi and mechabda yoise migufoi. Oivis ishti kegufoi is not so easy. Oivis ishti kegufoi. Chabda yoise migufoi is not so hard. Mechabda doesn't mean to hold the door open and to hold the chair for her and to help her put on her coat. Chabda means to spend money. Ain't covered ala mamon. Shenema asaliyas kala covered hazeh. The Medrash says covered means money. It means to spend money on your wife. If the person has money, if he doesn't have money, he doesn't have. But if he has money, that's my father was a Masada Gitma for many, many years, and he said that those are the two main causes of divorce. The two main causes of friction in marriage is number one, in-law trouble, that people don't get along with their in-laws. Sometimes the in-laws stick their 2 cents in. Sometimes the parents give too much advice. And sometimes the children are not that the parents are giving too much advice. Sometimes the children are just young and fresh, and they're disrespectful to their own parents. So that they've been in for the last 25 years, that nothing is going to change. But disrespectful to the in-laws are not used to this. So if they're going to be disrespectful to the in-laws, that can cause a breakdown of the marriage. So that's one major cause of friction in marriage. And Mishnah says that that's considered grounds for divorce. If the wife is mekalelos yoldo b'fonot, if the wife is disrespectful to the husband's parents in the presence of the husband, so that's grounds for divorce and he doesn't have to pay her ksuba. If the wife is responsible for destroying the marriage, the husband does not. Normally the din is the husband has to pay ksuba when he wants to divorce his wife, unless he can ascertain that she was at fault for destroying the marriage. So when is it considered she's at fault? So the Mishnah says she refuses to have children, or she doesn't want to go to the mikveh, or she gives him non-kosher food, machilos hashena me'usa. She's not a good wife, or Mekalel is the older b'fanim. She's disrespectful to his parents. It's the same thing if he's disrespectful to her parents. The Mishnah doesn't have the same thing. Everything in the reverse. If he doesn't want to have any children, same thing. But that's pshita, that whenever the klal is whenever the husband divorces his wife, the rule is he pays ksuba. The Mishnah tells you the exceptions to the rule. The elu yaitzu shalav ksuba. The Mishnah says if he can ascertain that it's the fault of the wife for ruining the marriage, then she loses the ksuba. These are considered things that destroy the marriage, whether the husband or the wife doesn't. The husband destroys the marriage even if he's not at fault, even if it's a non-fault divorce, he has to pay the ksuba. The Mishnah has to tell you when do we pin the blame on the wife and we say that she loses her ksuba. So this is one of the big causes for friction in marriage, is disrespect towards in-laws. And the other cause for divorce is money matters, that they don't see eye to eye about how to spend their money. Very often husbands are stingy and cheap and they don't want to buy clothing for the wife. They don't want to treat their wife nicely. And the Gemara says in Hazohar, later in Bava Metzia, that Rabbi told his Talmidim, Akiru Nishaihu, they should respect their wives, Kehecha Diktisasru, that it's his gula of Hashiras, if you spend money on your wife. If you spend too much money on your wife, then you're going to go broke, then it's going to be a gula of Hanias. It won't be a gula. If you see B'derech HaPshat, you don't need any gula. But if a person has the money to spend, and he's stingy, so then the Gemara says that this will cause him to lose out. Well, the Avram Hetiv Ba'avura, the pasuk says in Chumash, the Avram Hetiv Ba'avura, he got rich, he struck it rich because of his wife. That is the school of Hashiras. If the husband treats his wife nicely, and if he has money to spend, he should spend money decently in a reasonable way on his wife. He shouldn't be stingy on the wife. Mechabda means, let's say, if he has he just got a bonus of $500, and he needs a new suit and his wife needs a new dress. So if it's, everything is even, so then he should mechabda yesemikul, he should spend the money on the wife, unless the wife already has 50 dresses and 50 pairs of shoes and he only has two suits and two pairs of shoes. So then he needs that. You're not holding by the same madrig. But whatever, everything is equal and the wife is interested in something, so then it means he should spend money on the wife. Obviously, it means as far as treating her decently. Yeah, a husband has to love his wife. Some people don't realize that a husband has to love his wife. So it's a chiddush. Husband has to love his wife. It says in the Chumash. Vayehoveha. The Chazal said you have to drach kamoicha specifically goes on the wife. If he loves his wife, of course he has to treat her decently. We mentioned the other day that it says in Eben Ezra the Ramah quotes the Cherem HaKadmon Mishalol HaHakas Esishtoim. So we mentioned that it doesn't mean that until the days of the Kadmonim it was permissible or as a mitzvah to beat up your wife. It was always prohibited. It was always a biblical violation. It was always an Isser of a violation to cause harm to any human being, even a non-Jew. There's a din la yosef pen yosef, and it's certainly a violation of mechab v'yosef neguf, and it's a violation of oivisish tegeguf. It's a violation of everything. A violation of everything on the books. But the rabbis never said in the Talmud that the man deserves to drop dead over this issue. That was added on by the kadmonim. Acherim means that the person should die because of this. The Gemara says in Ma'ikot Nele Megalch, acherim is a curse that's nichnas into the ramachivar. So in addition to all of the biblical violations, there's also a cherem hakadmon shalol hakas esishta. But for sure it's forbidden. Some of the modern women have this bug in their heads. They don't want to be subservient to the husbands. They feel as if all the women are being oppressed by the men. So they don't want to be kofel to the husband to take on his married name. They want to maintain their single name, their maiden name. So this is very unfortunate. They treat the marriage as if it's only temporary. They want to maintain their identity, and the husband's going to maintain his identity, and there's no b'hoyi l'basar echad. They don't blend in to be one. Normal b'noik shabalim is either the husband takes on the wife's family name or the wife takes on the husband's family name to show that you have a marriage, that it's v'hoyu l'basarecha, that they're married. In the davening we say that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is such like one of a marriage, and we have both. We say v'shimcha agor l'HaKadosh aleinu karasa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls us Am Hashem. We took on his name Am Hashem. And Shmeina Karasa Bishmecha, he took our name and he incorporated it into his name. He's called Elokei Yisrael. So it's each one took on the other one's name. In some countries in the world, the wife takes on the husband's name. In some countries, the husband takes on the wife's name. The Marsha took on his Shviga's name because she supported his yeshiva. So he called himself Edlis. That was her married name. Or the one who married Rav Cook's daughter. He figured the name Cook would sell better than whatever his name was. So he took on the name Cook. It's all a little bit. It helped them a little bit. But you have to indicate that's the mini garland, that the husband, either the husband takes on the wife's name, wife takes on the husband's name, or you do both. Not that the woman should maintain her own maiden name to show that the each one is separate. That's like by the behemoths. By the behemoths, that's what the Ravid points out in the Hakdamah to the Baal HaNefesh. When the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, he created Zoch and a cave of all the animals, but Adam he didn't create. Adam lo mata is a kineg. Adam Arishan saw the male and the female of all the animals. Each one was created separately. Adam Arishan didn't find a kineg because the Baruch Shalom wanted to show him that the wife is not going to be a separate entity. The wife has to come from the husband and has to blend in together to be one. Has to be v'hoi l'basar echad. It's a tragedy, this whole shtick of the women's lib movement. It's against the whole nature of the whole institution of marriage. They want to destroy. They have destroyed. Not they want to destroy. They have already destroyed the whole institution of marriage. But just because they destroy it doesn't mean that we have to adopt all of their shenanigans. It depends what the meaning combina is, and it depends what that means.
Well, here in New York,
I would think that here in New York, it means the same as the wife maintaining her maiden name.
Even though they both will change the name.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, maybe, what about sometimes people have to set the women are doctors, lawyers, and they develop a clientele or a reputation based on a professional name, and sometimes in practice of their profession, it's difficult for them to change the name after they've been in practice for a few years.
Okay. Okay, you have no choice. But if it's not that difficult, you can change that also. You can change the name there too. The beginning of Parshas Chayisorah, the Torah records the institution of Kever Yisrael. The din requires that you have to bury Jews separately from non-Jews. Not only does the Jew have to lead a different life while he's alive, even after he dies, everything is different. Totally different style of living and different the Chaim of Amavis, everything is different. We have in Halacha, Gemara Megillah, quotes a Braisa that distinguishes between Tashmishei Mitzvah and Tashmishei Kedusha. But let's say the Esrog or the Lulav, after Sukkot is over, so there's no law you put it in the Sheamus. You finish the Sukkot, you throw it in the garbage. A talus, you have an old talus that's worn out and no one's going to wear it anymore. So the halacha says you throw it in the garbage. The Rashba has a Ravid on a Gemara in the end of Shabbos that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch from the Rashba B'Shem Ravid. That it's not right to throw it together with the dirty diapers, or to throw it together with the fish bones or with the chicken bones. So you wrap it in a plastic bag and then you throw it in the garbage. The talus or the lulav and yes. As opposed, these are tashmishei mitzvah. You have the old sukkah, so you throw it in the garbage when you finish. As opposed to tashmishei kedusha, that the halacha says that they're nignozim. Tashmishei mitzvah is rokim, they may be thrown in the garbage. As opposed to tashmishei kedusha, which are nignozim. Let's say you have an old pair of tefillin, and it's possible, and you can't use it anymore. An old paper Torah, an old mezuzah cover, a case. The mezuzah itself is gufik kedusha, and the cover, the plastic box, let's say, broke. So that's called tashmishi kedusha. So you're not allowed to throw that in the garbage either. You have to put all of that in the shemus. How do you know how to determine what's considered tashmishi mitzvah, what's considered tashmishi kedusha? The Melchames, at the very end of Moed Katan, on the bottom of the Riz, interprets machlokes hatanaim in a braisa maseches machas. That they're arguing about whether tzitzis is tashmishei mitzvah or tashmishei kedusha. The Gemara Megillah gives tzitzis as an example of tashmishei mitzvah, that it's mizrokin, after the zman is up you can throw it out. And the Braisa has a machloikas satanaim, is it proper or is it improper to bury mason with a talus? So we have a strange practice, we bury the mason with a talus and we passel a tzitzis. Not sure exactly, the Rishonim are not sure what that's supposed to represent, but in the Tanoim, in the Braisa, it's a machloikas satanaim. Are you permitted? Is it proper or improper to bury mason with a talus? The Ramban claims this is the machlokes. To bury a mace with tefillin, he says that would be improper because it's tashmishi kedusha. It's like burying tashmishi kedusha with some junk, with a dead body. That's not right. But if the talus is only tashmishi mitzvah, so then he says there's nothing wrong. If it's tashmishi kedusha, then it's a bizoin to the kedusha. You're not allowed to bury a mace with the tefillin. So the Ramban claims that that's the machlokes satanaim, where the talus, the tzitzis, is tashmishi kedusha, tashmishi mitzvah. So again, we paskin based on the Bavli, the Gemara says in Megillah, that tzitzis is an example of tashmishi mitzvah, not tashmishi kedusha. So how did we decide? What's the criterion? How did we determine what falls under the category of tashmishi mitzvah, what falls under the category of tashmishi kedusha? Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes in Nefesh HaChaim in one place that the difference is what has the Beit Torah written on it. Tashmishi kedusha, gain the kedusha. The kedusha emanates always from the Beit Torah. Tashmishi mitzvah means everything else. It doesn't have any Beit Torah. So tzitzis doesn't have any psukim. Tzitzis and esrig and shofar and sukkah and schach, all these things, and lulav, all these things do not have any Beit Torah. But Beit Torah, tefillin and mezuzah have the Beit Torah on them. So those constitute tashmishi kedusha. The source of all of kedusha is tashmishi kedusha. And he says that the Gemara in Saita draws a distinction between Torah as opposed to other mitzvahs. The Pesukim say in Mishlei, Ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. The Torah is like a torch. Liman HaTorah is like a torch that gives tremendous illumination and it lasts longer. A torch lasts longer, derech klal, than a little candle. When a person performs a mitzvah, every time a person performs a mitzvah, it gives him a little illumination. He can understand a little better what's happening in the world. Oh, lo elam hazeh is doim ala lailo. That's how the Gemara says in the end of Bov Metzia. The Gemara comments on the pasuk in Baruch Nafshi. Toshes cheshech lihi loilu zeho elam hazeh shedoim ala loilu. It's very dark, it's hard to figure out what's going on here. So how do you succeed in turning on the lights? And you should gain insight into and understanding into what's right and what's wrong. So the Gemara says every time a person does a mitzvah, that gives a little illumination. Kiner mitzvah. Performing mitzvah is like lighting a candle. Lighting a candle gives a local illumination over here. The other candle in this corner is not going to illuminate the other corner, and the candle is not going to last for so long. After 4 or 5 hours, the candle will burn out. As opposed to learning Torah, that gives much more illumination. It's like a torch, the Torah or, and it lasts for longer. So the Gemara says in Saito that a person who learns Torah, not only bidna the asik, but not only while he's learning, will it protect him from doing averis. It theoretically should help even later, because the effect of the dvarim mikudashim. That's what Rav Chaim Volozhiner says. Learning Torah, the source of all of kedusha is from Torah. That's why Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah Tashmishe Kedusha. So it says Torah has a lasting effect of giving kedusha. So that's why Limud HaTorah is even megin, protects the person. Even bidna deloy asik ba, even after he finished learning a long time ago, as opposed to kiyum mitzvah, that's only bidna de asik ba. It's making bidna de asik ba. It's not making. While the person is doing the mitzvah, it's like a candle. The candle lasts temporarily, and after a couple of hours, so the effect of the candle wears off. So we apparently have such halach with respect to kvuras hamesim. We treat mesa Yisrael with respect and dignity, even if the person died already. So you start lift the pifta, he's not alive anymore. So what do you have to be mechabed him? Kozman, he's alive, he's doing mitzvahs. Okay, so you have to be mechabed the person because he's doing mitzvahs. Once he died, so what's the big deal? So you have to be mechabed mason for. Many of the non-Jews are not mechabed their mason. So the answer is, they're right and we're right. The mesa yakom are treated like tashmishay mitzvah. Kozman, the person was alive. He was involved in doing mitzvahs and ma'isim tovim, whatever the non-Jew was doing. And after he dies, no more mitzvahs and ma'isim tovim. He's unable to do anything. So it's a tashmishay mitzvah. And it's rachum sataka. You can cremate the body. You can throw it in the garbage if you want. You can incinerate the body. But the Jewish person is not only a tashmishay mitzvah, he's a tashmishay kedusha, because every Jewish person has the Beit Torah. And even those Amei Ha'aretz that never learned a word of Torah during their lifetime, the Talmud has a tradition that the Malach teaches the baby before the baby is born. All Jewish babies learn Torah before they're born. So that's apparently where that's Rav Soloveitchik wrote in one of his drushes, that's apparently where the Kedusha Yisrael stems from. Kedusha has to stem from, Rav Chaim Volozhiner claims, Kedusha has to stem from Torah. All Kedusha stem from Torah. Kedusha Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah. All Kedusha stems from Torah. And the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash stems from the fact that you have the Luchas in the Kodesh of Kadoshim. And the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael also, Rav Soloveitchik can explain, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael also stems from Torah. And the Kaddish of Eretz Yisrael the first time around was the Kibush V'chiluk. So the Kibush was done by whom? So we usually say, Sahal. So the Tanakh says, no, the Kibush was done by the Aron Abris, in front of Sahal. That's what it says, Aron Abris was the Torah, with the Luchas, with the Torah. So that was the Kedusha Rishon of Eretz Yisrael, was brought about by Torah Shebichzav. The Kedusha Shniyah of Eretz Yisrael, Rav Soloveitchik developed the whole thing, was perhaps brought about through the Kedusha of the Torah Shebaal Peh. That's when the Torah Shebaal Peh picked up in the days of Ezra. That's how the Seder Olam writes that up until the days of Ezra they were developing Torah Shebichzav, the Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah. And then it says from the days of Ezra on, Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, Mikan V'Eilech, Chaskei Sushma Dibrei Chachamim, you have to pay more attention to the Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Chazal say that Kimu v'Kiblu Kimu Amen Shekimu Klar, that the main Kabbalah of the Torah Shebaal Peh was right before they built the second Beis Hamikdash, just at the time of Nes Purim. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik's suggestion was. Maybe the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael the second time around, there was no Kibush at all. There was no Kibush, period. Not with Sal, not with Aron HaBris, not with Eden. There was no Kibush at all. So what was the Mekadosh of Eretz Yisrael the second time? So he thought maybe the Mekadosh was for the Torah Shebaal Peh, and he explained maybe that's why the Kedusha Shni was Kitcha Lossi Lov. Maybe the Kedusha that's created through the Torah Shebaal Peh is more lasting than the kedusha that's created through Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav can be destroyed. It's a hefta. Sof kotam is a hefta. If they can say Torah, I burn it, so there's no more sefer Torah. But Torah Shebal Peh belongs to the world of ideas. You can't destroy an idea. So Torah Shebal Peh doesn't lend itself to being destroyed. That's a Gemara like that. The Gemara talks about that. The Gemara Moed Katan says, Haroi Sefer Torah Shenisraf. If you see someone burning a Sefer Torah, not by accident, on purpose, they're Mevaza Sefer Torah, they want to burn it, destroy it. So the Gemara says, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, you have to rip Kriya twice. Once for the Klaf, and once for the Oisius. Once for the destruction of the parchment, and once for the destruction of the Ksav. So you see from the Gemara that when you burn a Sefer Torah, not only does the parchment get destroyed, the Oisius get destroyed as well. And that's worthy to require Kriya. And then the Gemara has a statement in Avodah Zarah. In the first paragraph, the Gemara says that when they burnt Rav Chanina ben Tragin, I think, when they burnt one of the Tanoim, when the Romans burnt him to death, so his eyes were jumping, apparently. So the student says to him, what does he see? So he said that he sees Gvilin Nisrafin Anosias Parchas Bavir. He sees that the Goyim did not succeed in destroying the words of the Torah. They wrapped him in the Sefer Torah. He was giving a Shia, public Shia, so they wrapped him in the Sefer Torah and they burnt him with the Sefer Torah. And he saw the parchment was burned, but the Oisius, they didn't succeed in destroying the Oisius. The Oisius jumped up to heaven. Oisius parchas ba'avir. They were flying up to heaven. So the Mefarshim ask is a contradiction between the two Gemaras. The one Gemara says when you burn the Sefer Torah, the letters get destroyed also. And that's why you have to recreate twice, once for the cloth and once for the letters. The other Gemara says when the Goyim destroy the Sefer Torah, they don't succeed in destroying the letters. They only succeed in destroying the klaf. So there are different suggestions given how to be miyashiv this contradiction between the two Gemaras. So some say that that's the parrot for the contradiction. The Gemara in Moed Katan is talking about Torah Shebichsav. This Gemara, true, it says Rav Chanina ben Tragyon was, they wrapped him in the Sefer Torah. He was giving a shear from the Sefer Torah. They wrapped him in the Sefer Torah and they burnt the Sefer Torah. The Oisius of the Sefer Torah were burnt. But he wasn't just giving a shir and he was saying Rav Chumash and translating. No, he was giving a whole development to the Torah Shebal Peh. So he meant those osios of the Parchas Bavir. You can't destroy Torah Shebal Peh. It's Rav Soloveitchik, right after the war, right after the Nazis had destroyed all of Mekayimus HaTorah in Europe. So he used to say over that Gemara in Avodah Zarah. That now we see it's even more than it was at that time, that the Nazis succeeded in destroying the bodies of the Jewish people. They succeeded in destroying the yeshivas and all of the svarim and all the sefer Torah, whatever, but they didn't succeed in destroying the Torah. The Torah remains, the Torah Shebal Peh remains on, and there are more people learning now than there ever were before. We never had so many people learning. Maybe in earlier generations they learned better, but numbers wise we have so many people learning now.
Why don't we say in the Gemara Moed Katan that you have two kriyas on the name of the Torah, once for the Klaf and once for the Otiyot? But it's not that you're destroying the Otiyot, but it's just because of the Otiyot, because the same way you would kriya when you hear a davar about the courses or something like that. So it's the kavana that the person who destroyed the Sefer Torah had to destroy the Otiyot, which is in action which is a statement about the courses. And that's why you're kriya. So why don't we assume that? Why do we assume that the
Otiyot
of the
Torah
is not
going to
destroy it at all?
Could also be that that's the Pshat. It's possible. Anyway, that's what Rav Soloveitchik used to say, that the Gemara says, Ha'imad al-Ameis, B'shas, Tzias, Mishom, has to rip Kriya, why? Ha'olamazadayim, Ha'olaraya, Sefer Torah, Shenisraf, Shechayu, L'Kroya. So what's the comparison? Ha'olamazadayim, a person has to rip Kriya. When a Jew dies, similar to a person having to rip Kriya when they destroy the Sefer Torah. So you see that every Jew is like the Sefer Torah. That was the theme of a drasha that he once gave Israel. Every Jewish person is like the Sefer Torah. Well, how come? Because the Malach teaches the baby the Torah before the person is born. So even the biggest Amoris in the world, if he's Jewish, we assume that he has some kosher maluach l'decha. He has some Torah in his system from before he was born. Anyway, but that's the halacha, that the halacha requires kvura on a Jewish dead body as opposed to a nochri nochaybas kvura. And the pashtus why is because a Jewish body is considered tashmishi kedusha, because every Jewish person has some liman atayra in his system. And the nochrim don't have, the nochrim are very nice, there's a din of kovar abriyas, calls down the nochri is alive. It's not the same kovar abriyas as the Yisrael, but there is an inyan of kovar abriyas. And after the person dies, no more, it's a tashmishi mitzvah. Vacha, vacha, mamitzvah, some is nizrokim.
But if the
No, the Ramban HaChumash points out that there's no Chayvus Kvura by Nochrim. Rashi writes on Chumash that you have to bury the Mason Kavatik Barama Yomahukilos Elakim Toloi. It's a bizoyan to the Rabban Shalom. Why is it a bizoyan? So Rashi writes because man was created B'Tzelem Elakim. So that's why it's a bizoyan to HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you don't bury the person the same day. So the Ramban asks if that's the reason why it's a bizoyan because man was created B'Tzelem Elakim, then the din should apply even to Mesa Yakum. We know from the Talmud that it's not so. The Chayvus Kvura is only a Mesa Yisrael. There is no Chayvus Kvura a Mesa Yakum. Rabban says you have to say it differently because Jewish people are bottom lamachim. Don't say that because human beings were created b'tzelem elokim. Chavi b'adam shenivra b'tzelem applies to all human beings. Chavi b'insel shenikra b'adam lamachim. The Mishnah says that's only Yisrael b'adam lamachim. So that's the kilos elokim tolle, the bizoyin to the Rabban Shalom. What the pasuk is alluding to is the fact that the Jewish people are created as b'adam lamachim. So that's why there's a chayvus kvura. Ramban says from the pasuk in Chumash and from the pasuk in Yeshua, it says when they killed the Lamed Aleph Malachim and they hung them up on the gallows, so they took down the bodies on the same day before Shkia to fulfill what it says in the Chumash. That's what it says in Yeshua, to fulfill the pasuk in Chumash, Kavatik Berenim B'Yomahu. So Ramban asks, but they were Meisei Yakum. Why is there a Chayvus Kvura? Ramban is Mechadish that in Eretz Yisrael there's an additional din. V'loi Sitami Yisad Mosa. That's how the pasuk says, Kavatik Berenim B'Yomahu Kikilus Avakim Tolu V'loi Sitami Yisad Mosa Asher Shama Kras Nasim Lachor. So the Ramban writes apparently in Chutz La'aretz there's no Chayvus Kvura on Meisei Yakum, but in Eretz Yisrael there is, because of the halacha of Lo'is Tamei Asad Moschum. That's why there's a big problem. Those who want to go to medical school, those who go to medical school learn anatomy by working on a dead body. So the post can point out that there are three problems. One problem that a Meis is also Bano. So how can you learn anatomy from dealing with, from working on a dead body? You're getting on off in a dead body. Secondly, you mevatel mitzvah kvura, kavod digvurei b'yohu, and you leave the dead body in the drawer. You come back every week, every day, and you do more work on the dead body. Mevatel mitzvah kvura. And thirdly, you cut them up into little pieces, and it's a violation of nivul ha'meis. You have to be mechabed meis. So the answer to all the three problems is you get a meis ha'yakum, you get a non-Jewish body. So there's no mitzvah kvura, and there's no iser nivul ha'meis. And the Iker Adin, we say that it's really Muta Bano. And the Shulchan Aruch, it says that Meisei Yakum are also Bano. So the Gomer Goyim says, the Iker Adin, it's against the Gemara. Medina the Gemara is really Muta Bano. It's a Chumer from the Rishonim. So Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying that in order to study medicine, if the person is Meskabim Hashem Mitzvah, so you can be Meikal on this Chumer. So we go back, we revert back to the Iker Adin, and Meisei Yakum are Muta Bano. But this whole heter, this whole kula only b'medva mamurim, if you go to medical school in the chutzlur. But if a person goes to medical school in Eretz Yisrael, then you have a problem. Then you have even Meisei Yakum, state below Sitame Yisad Moskva. There's a prohibition to leave Meisei Yakum around. Rabbi Chalap's father, Zechen Lebracha, published this in one of his essays. He used to print many Divrei Torah years ago. He raised the issue that was to go to medical school in Eretz Yisrael is that problem. They always, for years and years, they always had a big supply of Meisei Yakum. They used to have a lot of dead Arab bodies. So they always assumed there's no problem. Always Meisei Yakum. But he points out there's the problem of Eloi Sittam Yisad Mosul, according to the Ramban's comment.
Well, before you mentioned the Shishu Al-Kamal, you quoted from the Brisa, having questions about the facts and
sentences
you mentioned earlier. Do you explain thoroughly what the society is to say
I don't know. According to the other opinion that you treat tzitzis as tashmishi kedusha, that's what the Ramban says. So what's that? According to him, what's the definition of tashmishi kedusha versus tashmishi mitzvah? I don't know. But the accepted opinion is the way it says in the Bavli that tzitzis is only tashmishi mitzvah. So Rav Chaim Volozhin gives his definition. Because Yiddish was used in the yeshivas to teach Torah, so he thought that it should have the hashiva. It does not have hashivas bifnei atzmo, just to speak Yiddish, but he thought that it has the hashivas as a tashmishi kedusha, because it was used traditionally for so many generations to learn Torah, to teach Torah. That's what he wrote. Yeah, yeah.
It's the reason why the kulos is kulos elokim tamei. So then, why can't you just bury in a coffin? Why can't you bury in the ground?
That's the pasuk says. You have to have kulos bekarka. That's another din. That's another din. You have to bury kulos. It has to be the offer out of Allah for tashuv. So the pasuk, that pasuk is the gala, and the other pasuk that the kvura has to be the kark. There is a din that a kohen gadol, even a kohen gadol, is not allowed to be mitami even to design kroiv, is mitami to a meis mitzvah. So Rav Soloveitchik used to give he was fond years ago, he used to give drushes about kavod abrius. So he would give a whole description, the kohen gadol on Yom Kippur is ready to go and to do the avodah lefnai v'lefnim, and then he comes upon a meis mitzvah and he has to be mitame. So someone wrote up the drushes. And who is the meis mitzvah? Who is it? A bum? Who can it be? Who can the meis mitzvah be? A Jewish bum. Ain't no koyrim. No one knows who it is. If he has relatives, he's not a meis mitzvah. So the Jewish attitude is that we consider each human being, each Jewish person is considered so important, even though he's a nobody, the kohen gadol is a somebody with a capital S. So someone wrote this up in one of the journals. And then someone wanted to attack Rav Soloveitchik, but he thought he wouldn't get away with that, so he attacked the one who wrote it. But he really meant to attack Rav Soloveitchik. How ridiculous this is! Kohen Yom Kippur walks with a whole entourage, a whole bunch of people. So how can he find the meis mitzvah on Yom Kippur? Then furthermore, what is he going to do on Yom Kippur? You're not about to bury anybody, not on Shabbos, not on Yom Kippur. Yom Tov Rishon, bury all day goyim. Yom Tov Sheni, bury all day Yisrael. So what kind of a ridiculous marshal is that? That the Kohen Yom Kippur is matami to the meis mitzvah. What's he going to do? So he printed this letter to the editor attacking Chalila, not attacking Rav Soloveitchik. He attacks the Tipish who wrote over the drasha, but that was word for word what the drasha was. So the next month they printed another letter to the editor. Rav Soloveitchik was just quoting a Tosis in Nazir. The Achronim asked the Kasha on a Tosis in Nazir, but that's the Moshe that Tosis gave. Kavadalai Yom Kippur is ready to do the Avodah. Tosis writes that Moshe. So the question is, so what's the Kohen Gadol going to do already on Yom Kippur? Not allowed to bury a mace on Yom Kippur. So what child? So some of Farshim say the Kavod Abrius requires that you should cover up the mace. If you just have a mace, Amutal Bachamo, true, you're not allowed to bury him on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to do any malochas on Yom Kippur, but it should at least you should cover up the mace and maybe put him in an aron that he shouldn't be exposed, to take care of the Kavod Abrius problem. And then the Kvura, that of course you can't do on Yom Kippur. That's not the Yom Kippur, so that you have to wait till after. But there are two madrigas.
The mitzvah of burying the Akum Eretz Yisrael, is that a mitzvah to bury any Akum that died in Eretz Yisrael, or just that you shouldn't have the mace staying unburied in Eretz Yisrael? Like, what if you take it outside of Eretz Yisrael, you destroy the mace in some other fashion?
Yeah, it shouldn't be. Well, it's a time inside Mosul. I don't think it's because anyone who dies in Eretz Yisrael.
I know overriding medical concerns, but we have to have doctors in Eretz Yisrael, so we have to. The way it's done is I must have that. That Amish isn't there, right? So we leave going in Eretz Yisrael, even if it was, wouldn't it be incoming day for some concern for Emirati people?
They should all go to a medical school in Chutz Lars. What's up there?
This generation, that's possible. The previous generation, the person who's alive, couldn't go to New York to go to the best.
I don't know. There is a din pikuach nefesh. Yeah, pikuach nefesh is daich everything. But this is a real issa deraisa. The pasuk in Yeshua says they bury the meisa yakum, the lamed al kumvachim, to fulfill mashikosa b'teres Moshe, as it says in the pasuk in Chumash. It says they have to bury on the same day. Blessed tamis ad Moshe. Yeah, the pasuk in Yeshua quotes this as a real din deraisa. There is a din that pikuach nefesh is there, but is this called pikuach nefesh? This I don't know. This is already because the people from medical school are going to do pikuach nefesh later, so they're already allowed to do isurim now in order to lead up. In another 5 years, they'll get the degree, and then they'll be saving people's lives. I don't know if that's called pikuach nefesh. Moshe Feinstein writes that it's not called pikuach nefesh. He says that you're not allowed to violate averis when you go to medical school on the smach that this is all going to lead to pikuach nefesh later. He says, even though far-fetched pikuach nefesh, even though sartor nefesh also doicha, but he says he thinks that this is too far-fetched. Not when you go into medical school.
Going back to the
dream,
a lot of times you have a wedding invitation, like little chalakim of psukim, or part of design, they have psukim, like the Shobar and Yehuda. So you get an invitation to a wedding, you have to, it's not always written as a possible record, even if it is, that the goal is.
You should really cut off that part with the pasuk. That's why Moshe Feinstein writes in the Sefer that it's not proper to write these chatzoy psukim on the wedding invitations because people throw it in the garbage. So he says that's not proper. He quotes a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara quotes a Braisa from Megillas Tainus that one of the holidays that the Institute of Isman Baisheni was, that the practice used to be for many years, they would write down what year it is. Someone borrowed money from someone else. So they would write in the document when the halvor was made, and they would write down, and this was the fifth year since Shimon was the Kohen Gadol of Hu Kohen Lekel El Yom. They would write Shem Hashem in the shtar. And then when the loiva would pay up the debt to the malva would give him back the shtar, he would rip it up and throw it in the garbage. So the Shem Hashem would be mutal ba'ashpo. So the Bezen HaGadol, the Rabbanim, insisted they should stop writing Shem Hashem in shtaris. When they were mavapu, adkarto, askara Shem Shemayim, mishtaraya, when they were bitlu ala adkarto, mishtaraya, when they stopped writing the Shem Hashem in the shtaris, so then the Chachamim made a yontif. They stopped being so frum, and they were no longer mavaza the Shem Shemayim. So Moshe says, you see from the Gemara, that it's an inyan, that we should get the Balabatim to stop putting psukim and stop putting Shem Hashem on wedding invitations, which everybody throws in the garbage. Letters from? So they were all doing wrong. They're all doing wrong. They're all doing wrong. It's against the din. They're not allowed to. That's also wrong. Tosis asked that kasha, if you bury the mason with tzitzis, so why is it like the rosh that if we go in the cemetery we have tzitzis hanging out? We have tzitzis, they have tzitzis. So Tosis answers, but Tosis asks, the Gemara says when you bury the mason, he does wear tzitzis, so what's the like the rosh? The Tosis says, but we're mitzvah v'yos and the mason zain a mitzvah v'yos, so it's also like the rosh. That's what Tosis says. Because in the Gemara it says, when you bury the mace with the tachrif, and the Gemara says you do have to put in tzitzis. There shouldn't be a loy l'rosh. If you put in tzitzis in the beged ha-mace, so why is it a loy l'rosh if someone wears a tzitzis exposed in the base? That's right. So he said, because the mace is ain't a mitzvah v'yosa. And the chai is mitzvah v'yosa. One of the rabbis pointed out that the Gemara has a whole discussion whether Migud Choshen Amamayin Choshen Ashvuos or not. So why don't they derive it from Parshas told us that Yaakov made a deal with Esav that he should sell him the Bechorah. So he sold him the Bechorah and he was afraid he was still going to cheat him. So he says, Vayom Hishavali, I want you to swear. Vayishavali, he swore. Why do he want to swear? Because he was a Choshen Amamayin. He knew that his brother was a crook. He was a cheat. He was afraid, even though he made a deal with him, signed, sealed, and delivered. He sold him, he gave him Zid al Doshim, and he sold him over the Bechorah. He was afraid his brother was going to cheat him. He wasn't so from it, but in Admalam Bakim, that he would never be Mavazah. So he said, Hishavali, I want you to swear. So by Hishavali, he swore. So don't you see the Migad Chashin Amaman, Allah Chashin Ashvus? Don't you see a Mefurish Apostle from the Chumash? So first of all, the Mefarshim and the Chumash do not understand it like that. The Mefarshim and the Chumash understand that the problem was that they were dealing with the Dovish Lo Bali Olam. We're dealing here, the Bechor was a Dovish Lo Bali Olam. He couldn't use the Bechor for anything right now. So whenever you sell a Dovish Lo Bali Olam, the Kenyan Mamish doesn't take effect. Unless you take a Shvua. If you take a Shvua, then it's binding Mitam the Shvua. It's not binding Mitam the Kenyan. The Kenyan is Sof still on a Dovish Lo Bali Olam. So that's what the standard Mefarshim Derishayim and the Mefarshim Amikra say like that. He said, Hishav Ali, swear to me, so it'll be binding mitam the Shavua. Not so much binding mitam the Kenyan. And they refer you to the Rambam. Some of them quote, I think, maybe the Archaim or some of the others quote, the Rambam writes that when Yaakov Avinu was running away from Esau, in Parshas Vayetzi, he says, he promises to give Maisa, but he didn't have a penny to his name. He didn't have anything. So what are you going to say? Amirasa la gavaykim sirasa la hegedami, that Hegdish is kaina. Hegdish can't be kaina to Davish la bali olam. But because Vayida Yankov neder lemar, since he took as a neder, so the Rambam writes, it's binding mitam neder. It's binding mitam neder. It's not binding mitam kinyan. It's binding mitam neder. So that's what some interpret over here also, that the thing that Yaakov was concerned about was that it's a Davish la bali olam. So since he made him take a shvuah, so it's binding mitam shvuah. But I think even if you learn the other pshat, the way this Rebbe was suggesting, that Yaakov distrusted his brother. His brother was a crook. He didn't trust Esav, and he said he wants him to swear. Everybody agrees, like when we learned the Gemara, we discussed, everybody agrees that there is a group of people. We can't deny that there are people who are careful about Binodim Lamakams and they're not careful about Binodim Lahaveras. So there certainly are people who are Choshed Amamayn and they're not Choshed Ashvusa. Shvus Binodim Lamakam and Maman is Binodim Lahavera. The other question is that group of people so significant that it's meaningful to administer a Shvuah based on that? If it's only 1% of the population or 2% of the population, then you say, Migdah Choshed Amamayn and Choshed Ashvusa. It doesn't make sense to administer a Shvuah that may be helpful. It may enhance the nemanis. The halacha is that the person has nemanis b'al dimin taimasa even without swearing. But if he swears, if he makes the statement on the road, then it's even a deeper nemanis, and it's even a higher level of nemanis. It's only considered a higher level of nemanis if there's a significant group of people, 15% of the population, who would be chashed amamayna, they wouldn't be chashed ashvus. But it's only 1% of the people. It does make sense that Bezdin should administer a shvuah. Look, but Yagmavina wants to get security, so he wants another 1% of security. He says he's shavali. That's not a taina. The Gemara has a pilpul. Does it make sense to administer a shvuas hadayanim that the Torah requires the guy has to swear? So it's a 1% better biru. So that's the whole institution of shvuah deraisa, that it's more mavur, 1% more mavur. But whenever a person wants, like, people get lawyers to make to read over documents of agreements, just to have an added clause to give a half of a percent of security to make sure the guy doesn't cheat him over here, so add on a clause over here. So he added on a shvuah that it should be 1% more secure. It doesn't have to be 15%. We're not talking about a shvuah there, right? So it's just he personally wants more security. Right, so he thought it'll be a little better. He thought it'll be too much better. It's not going to be right. The halacha says whoever is posulay, this Tesis quotes is a Mishnah Shvuah that lists off Eilu Psulim LeShvuah, has the same list that appears in the third Perkin Sadeh. Eilu Hem Psulim LeEdus, the same list appears. All of those Rishoyim and Ganovim who are posulay Edus are also posulay Shvuah. But over here he knew his brother that it may help a little bit more, so he wanted a little more security. In the Sefer Aksava HaKabbalah, the author quotes from, he always quotes from the Zohar, and he quotes the Mechilta de Rav Shimon Baichoy. That's what he quotes, Mechilta de Rav Shimon Baichoy. So he quotes from the Zohar on the passage that says that Yitzchak dug the exact same wells after his father died. He dug the exact same wells as his father Avram, and he gave the exact same names as the father Avram. So he quotes from the Zohar that this was the Midah of Yitzchak, the Ikar Midah of Masora. Avram Avinu was an original thinker. He was a pioneer, and he discovered all kinds of interesting things on his own without the Rabbanu Shalom even notifying him. He was able to be mechaven on his own. And the Medrash says, how did he figure everything out? So the Medrash has an expression, he had ployos yoatos, his kidneys were able to advise him. He was able to figure out. And Yitzchak is never described as such an original thinker, such a pioneer. His big midah is masor, which is a big midah, which is a big important thing. A lot of times you have a great original thinker, an Adam Gadol Meyod, and he said, take Lamashal de Vilna Gaon. He was so original, he didn't have time to write anything down. After the age of 40, they say he never wrote anything. He just kept on saying chidushim and chidushim. So sometimes the students wrote it down, sometimes they didn't write it down, sometimes they wrote it down poorly. A lot of the biuri, all the things that we have, the Sifri Agro and Tanakh, are all written by the students. The Vilna Gaon only wrote down the Biur Agro and Shulchan Aruch. And after 40, everything that he said was written down by Talmidim, and a lot of it was poorly written. So what you really need is, when you have such an original thinker, you need somebody in the next generation who should be Miyushev and just be prepared to write everything down and to publish everything that the one before had. You're not always Avraham Avinu doesn't always have a son who's Yitzchak, who's prepared to dig the same wells and give it the same names and do exactly everything that the father did. Usually the children want to be known on their own as original thinkers, so they go into another field, or they disagree with the parents or whatever, a new mahalach or something. So that's a big chashivas, that you have to have people who follow Masorah. But when you follow Masorah, the Pasuk says, sometimes if you think you're doing the exact same thing as the father, sometimes it's not the same. Here the Torah describes, Vayhi rov ba'aretz, Vavad ha-rov ha-rishon asher ha-yav b'mei Avraham, Vayilech Yitzchak al Avimelech melech plishtim gerora. So Rashi quotes from the Medrash, he thought it's going to go exactly like the father, everything exactly the same. You're violating the Masorah. You're not doing the same as the father. Your father was not an Oilot Mimah. You were an Oilot Mimah. You were Korib Agabi Hamizbech. So you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. If you take a Korban outside of the Beis Hamikdash, outside of Yerushalayim, it becomes Nitzol B'Yotzei. So Yitzchak was a Korban. He thought that he's going in the footsteps of his father, but he wasn't. If the father would have been alive, if the father would have been an Oilot, the father would not have gone to Chutz Lord. The father wasn't an Oilot. Sometimes you say that times do change, and because you have different circumstances, it's a different shaila. Not that the halacha changes, but the shaila changes. It's a different mitzvah. So that's what the Rebbeinu Shlomo told Yitzchok, that he's making a mistake. That sometimes you cannot do exactly the same. You think you're doing exactly the same as the father. A lot of times it's not exactly the same. In connection with this, there's such a gemara in Sanhedrin where the gemara says that Rebbeinu Shlomo Olam expressed his dissatisfaction with Yeshua ben Nun, why Yeshua ben Nun made a cherem on Yericho. Because later Ochan violated the cherem, and the whole Jewish people was punished when they waged the war against Ai, so they lost the war. And the Yeshua ben Nun didn't understand. Everything was promised with Nisim and the Flores. So they won one war, Yericho, with Nisim and the Flores. Then the very next war, Ai, they lost the war. So what happened? So Rebbeinu Shlomo said, Chati Yisrael, and it's your dawn fault. Who told you to make a cherem on Yericho? If you wouldn't have made a cherem, Ochan wouldn't have violated anything. So the Maharsha there is bothered with it. Quotes, the Maharsha quotes to the Mefarshim on Medrash. Quotes the Feitayer. Asked the Kasha, what was it? Yeshua's fault. Yeshua followed in the footsteps of the Rebbe Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara says on the same daf in Sanhedrin, on daf Mem Dalet, that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he waged war in the Midbar with the different Malachim, he made a cherem on all the property. And this character, Ochan, violated every cherem on the books. He violated the days of Moshe Rabbeinu also. It wasn't the first time he violated. So everything was the same as it always was. So why does Baruch Shalom get angry at Yeshua ben Nun? It did exactly the same as the Rebbe. And the Chevermon violated the same thing. Ochan violated the cherem days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Same thing. Why did he get angry at Yeshua ben Nun? So that's what the Maharsha quotes this kasha from early Rachmanim. So the Maharsha says he thinks it's not a good kasha. Making a cherem on the city is not from the Taryag Mitzvah. It's not like shaking a lulav, like benching, like saying Krishna. It's not from the dinim that you have to do. It's a political decision. Do you want to make a cherem or not want to make a cherem? When it comes to politics, you can't say I'm going to do exactly the same as my Rebbe did. The Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu, lived at a time that there was no din of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebizeh. The din of Orvus, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebizeh, that if one person doesn't aver, the whole tzibur is punished, began Mishav Yisrael Asayarden. It began in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, when they crossed over the Yarden, and the Mekabel, the Bris, and Hagriz Maharebos, and the Mashur quotes, it's all on the same daf in Sanhedrin, daf Mem Dalet. That's when the Allah Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebizeh began. So now, if you're going to make a cherem, all you need is one person to violate the cherem and the whole tzibur, the whole kohol can be punished. So now it's ridiculous to make a cherem. You can't say, when it comes to politics, that you're going in the footsteps of the Rebbe, everything is exactly the same. If all the circumstances are exactly the same, so then you go in the footsteps of the Rebbe. But all you need is one change in the circumstance that's not the same. So you're not, it's not that you're following tradition. You're violating tradition. Moshe Rabbeinu himself wouldn't have made a cherem if he would have been alive in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. That's what the Maharsha points out in the Gemara. There's a lot of times people think that they're going in the footsteps of their parents. The father was from the Mizrahi, the father was from the Aguda, the father was from the Turekarta. So therefore, now also the Turekarta. Now also you want to give away the Medina to the Arabs. The Arabs want to kill every Jew. The Turekarta, now they're crazy. They were always crazy. But now they're crazier than ever. Even if your great-great-grandfather, Dairy Deris, were all the Turekarta. But now to be from the Turekarta. They'll kill everybody. They want to kill everybody now. It's not like it was before. Or the Aguda. The Aguda before Hakamasa Medina is one Shaila. The Aguda after Hakamasa Medina is a different Shaila. Maybe it's better, maybe it's worse, but you can't say it's exactly the same. You can't say that the Rabbonim who support the Aguda after Hakamas HaMedina, they're following in the footsteps of Rab Chaim Brisker. How do you know what Rab Chaim Brisker would say after Hakamas HaMedina? Maybe he'll say he's still against the Mizrahi, maybe he'll say he's for the Mizrahi. How do you know? Maybe he's for. Maybe he's opposed to establishing Medina, but once you've established with the Yevid, it's a different ballgame. So the Rabbonim are making their own decision. They're making their own decision. They think if Rab Chaim Brisker would be alive today, he would do. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, but they can't say they're going in the footsteps of Rav Chaim Brisker. It's a different, the whole world is different. It's like over here, Yitzchak Avinu was also intelligent. And Yeshua Ben Nun was also intelligent. And they guessed wrong. They thought that this was Masoret. And it's not necessarily so. A lot of times the Shaila is a different Shaila. The world keeps on changing. So all you need is one little prat in Shulchan Aruch and any simon. You have 10, 15 sif, you have 20 sif. So it says, under these conditions, the din is like that. And those conditions, the din is differently. Under other conditions, the din is totally different. So just because for the last 2,000 years we've been observing the din one way, but maybe the conditions change now. So someone who knows how to learn, someone who knows the Shulchan Aruch, has to figure out what the din is in the Shulchan Aruch and see how to apply it in this case. In the collection of letters of the Chazon Ish, they have such a, the Chazon Ish wrote such a letter. He writes that it's not easy to pass in halachas, and he says the difficulty is twofold. Number one, you have to figure out what the din is. You have to figure out under what conditions of the din like this. He says that's the easier part of working out the shabbat. He says the more difficult, you have to figure out under certain circumstances what's the din, under those circumstances what's the din, under these circumstances what's the din. Then he says the more difficult thing is to size up the situation to know, does this case, is this a description of Sif Aleph, or is this a description of Sif Beis, or is this a description of Sif Gimel, which is a different case. That's very difficult also, to be able to match up what the circumstances are under your noses, which Sif does it correspond to in the Shulchan Aruch. Here also, that's what happened over here with Yitzchak Avinu, with Yeshua Ben Nun. The Midrashim point out that they didn't realize that circumstances had changed. It was a different Shaila. Different Shaila is a different Psak. Very strange. We don't understand over here what happened in Parshas Toldos, that Yitzchak was interested in giving the brachas to Esav, and then later on, and then he was a little upset when he found out what happened. Then later on, he gives Yitzchak's Birkas Avram. He gives the Birkas Avram to Yaakov. So it sounds like he wasn't upset at the end. I mean, after he realized that that Yaakov had fooled him, that he wasn't angry anymore. So it's very strange. So many of the Mefarshim point out that Birchas Avraham, the Rambam quotes, Yitzchak's Birchas Avraham means the Kedushas Yisrael. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu that he's not going to be Mitasa Shleima. Not all of his children will be Jewish. One was Jewish and one was not. The Yitzchak, you call the Zera. Yishmael was his son, was a Ben, but he wasn't the Zera Avraham. Zera Avraham is the one who carries over the tradition of the father. Yitzchak was the Zera. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the Yitzchak, but I call Yitzchak. So which one of Yitzchak's children, also Yitzchak, is also not going to be Mitasa Shleima. That concept of Mitasa Shleima means that all of your children are Jewish. Yeah, by Yasa Dava Pashut. I have 9 children. They're all Jewish. What's the surprise? They may not necessarily, a person has, of course all the children are Jewish. They may not all be religious. That's a different thing. But Mitasa Shleima over here just means that they're all Jewish. That was a chiddush that was given to Yaakov Avinu. That from that time on, all the children are Jewish. But before those times, in the days of Yitzchak, Yitzchak had twin sons. Yaakov and Esav, they were twins from the same mother. Twins are usually from the same mother. They weren't. One was Jewish, one was not Jewish. There was no such halacha that the children are automatically necessarily Jewish. That then began from the days of Yaakovan. From the days of Yaakovan is Mitasa Shleima. All the children are Jewish. So when Avraham Avinu was promised Be Yitzchak below B'Yishmael Kor L'Chayis, Be Yitzchak below Kor Yitzchak, so which one of the twins is going to be Jewish and which one is going to be a Goy? So the Rambam, so he knew that only one was going to be Yitzchak below Kor Yitzchak. Which one? So the Rambam says it was determined by Yitzchak himself. He said, Yitzchak Birkas Avraham. Yitzchak Avinu gives the Birkas Avraham to Yaakov as opposed to Esav. So that means he wanted to transmit the Kedushas Yisrael to Yaakov, not to Esav. So that apparently all along he wanted to give that to Yaakov and not to Esav. And the brachas they wanted to give, that's how many Mefarshim and Chumash understand. The brachas that he had a Havamina to give to Esav, and then as it turned out, those were also given to Yaakov. That was all on Gashmias of Olam Hazeh. Tala Shemaim, Mishmani Horas, Rav Dagon Mesirish, that's not Bichas Avram. That's wealth, that's money. So originally he felt, let me make a chalukah, I'll give all the ruchnias to Yaakov and I'll give all the Gashmias of Olam Hazeh. I'll give the ruchnias to Yaakov and I'll give the Gashmias of Olam Hazeh to Esav. And then Rivka Imenu said no, that he should give everything. She couldn't approach her husband, but she told the son Yaakov, Alai kilaloscha b'ni, and Rashi quotes from the Targum Onkelos, Alai yisama b'nevua, she was told b'nevua that that's what you have to do, you have to fool the father and get the bracha, so you get both the gashmias and the ruchnias, you have to get everything. But apparently that many mefarshim understand that he never had a half a minute to give. Yitzchak Avinu never had a half a minute to give the Dichas Abraham to Esau, that he all along he planned to give that to Yaakov. The Baal HaTanya quotes in the Tanya an interesting passage from the Zohar. I'm not familiar with the Zohar, but he quotes it that when Yitzchak was interested in giving a bracha to Esau, so he asks his son Esau to prepare aseli matamim aseli matamim kasho ahavti, prepare delicious matamim like I enjoy. So then Rivka tells her son Yaakov he should bring the food, and she's going to prepare. And I'll prepare all the different machalim like your father enjoys. So the Tanya quotes from the Zohar, matamim is in the plural, because when you serve a meal, you don't just give a piece of chicken. You give fruit cup, then you give soup, then you give vegetable salad before the soup, I don't know. Then you give the main course, the chicken or the steak, whatever, you give meat, then you give kugel, then you give, chalent, then you give all kinds of puddings, all kinds, and you have dessert, all kinds. Matamim in the plural, variety is the spice of life. So Yitzchak Avinu said, give me a full meal with all the courses of the meal. So the Zohar has an expression that just like by human beings, people enjoy variety, that taste different things. So too, the Ribbono Shel Olam also says to the Bnei Yisrael, "Aseli matamim kasher ahavti." The Ribbono Shel Olam also says he enjoys variety. It gets boring. Everybody's going to do exactly like it says in the Mishnah Berurah. It's a little boring. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants a little variety also. So that's why he wanted you Beis Shvatim, that every Shevet should have a different approach, a different derech and avodas Hashem. It's not a stira. Not a stira. In fact, the Ramban writes on Chumash, the beginning of Parshas Shoftim, that every shevet, every one of the Yud Beis Shvatim had its own bezna gadol to pass him differently for each shevet. Every shevet had a different derech and avodas Hashem, and it wasn't a stira. And everything blends in to be one big mosaic. And the Baal Shalom appreciates all of this. It's not a problem of loisis gadol. If this shevet observes the mitzvahs this way, and this as long as everything is a proper derech, everything is always gadol. We're not talking about reform. We're talking about these chassidim and those chassidim and this yeshiva and that yeshiva and the other yeshiva. Every yeshiva has a different derech and avodas Hashem. There's nothing wrong with that. If it's going to be ois gehalt. The Bali Musa point out a comment that Rashi has in the name of the Medrash. It says that Esav married two wicked women who are mamish of the Avodah Zarah. These to burn besamim to Avodah Zarah. But the hiyena moras ruach liyitzchok al rivka, that the parents were absolutely aggravated that their son was married to such women of the Avodah Zarah. Then the next pasuk says that Yitzchak lost his sight; he became blind. But techena ain't of mirois. Why did he lose his sight? So Rashi quotes in the Medrash from the smoke from the ocean of the Torahs that his daughters-in-law were burning Torahs for Avodah Zarah. So he lost his sight. So why did only Yitzchak lose his sight? How come Rivka didn't lose her sight? So the Medrash says she was used to it already because she came from Laban's home. They were always of the Avodah Zarah. So it didn't have any effect on her. So it's interesting. How long did she already stay? According to the way Rashi quotes the tradition, she was only 3 years old. So how much ocean of Avodah Zarah did she already experience in a father's home? And at such a young age, what the terrible negative effect did it have? So you see from the way, if you put all the midrashim together, you see that even little children, at such a young age, everything has an effect. Can't just assume the child is a labadas until he'll be 9-10 years old. Whatever you do doesn't make a difference. It's not true. A lot of times now they find that children have serious psychological problems because of the fact that the babysitters are crazy and they start up with the children in all different forms and fashions and they make the children crazy. But that's extreme. But even without the extreme, a child at the age of 2 or 3 is exposed to Avodah Zarah. it leaves an imprint. So she was like immune to the Reach HaBavel Zayah. Yeah, she was used to that, even though she was such a tzaddikus, but still she had experienced it in her infancy. So it left an indelible impression upon her. So the Reach HaBavel Zayah didn't bother her. I remember the Mashgiach Zechan Levach and Yeshiva told us when he first came to America with, I forgot who it was, one of the Rabbanim from Slabodka, who he told us. He says they were walking, they were staying in the Broadway Central Hotel, it doesn't exist anymore, it fell down, the Broadway Central, and they were walking to Shul on Shabbos morning, and they saw the Jewish peddlers opened up their pushcart on Shabbos morning. So they said the Mashgiach fainted in the street. On Shabbos he fainted. And he and the other Talmidim, there were two Talmidim with him, they had to pick him up literally. He fell down in the street. He couldn't believe it that there were Jews who spoke Yiddish and Machal Shabbos Beferhesia on the east side. And then the next week, when they were walking the same distance, so he said he didn't faint. He felt faint. He felt faint. He said, Harachalishad. The third week, they just walked on. They got used to it. Everything leaves an effect. Let's tell you all they're wrong. Okay. Okay.